Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Starting and operating a small business against all odds, living largely by your wits, you demonstrate more courage and devotion to a dream than any other non-military American in this century.
We are back. It's 13 after. Thank you for joining us. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. And let me tell you who our special guest is this hour. Dr. Gary Schilling is the president of A. Gary Schilling Company, economic consultants and investment strategists. He's well known for his forecasting record. He's twice ranked as Wall Street's top economist by institutional investor polls of financial institutions. He's a contributing columnist to Forbes magazine. He's the author of Deflation, a book that I'm holding in my hand that we've covered many times on the show before with Gary. He is the publisher of an outstanding newsletter that I recommend to you called Insight. Gary, welcome back to the show.
Glad to be back, Jim.
It's good to have you with us. And Gary, by the way, folks, as I've said before, Gary is a member of our Brain Trust. And Gary, I don't know if you have this new information, but my new website's up, and it includes right now about 200 archives of our past shows, and you are in two of them.
Well, we've looked at it. It's very good.
Well, thank you. And there are more of your shows coming, by the way. We'll be getting some more of those up, including this one. This particular show will be up on the archives within probably a month or so. Gary, I wanted you to join us because I wanted to talk about the economy and about your perspectives on what has been happening, what is happening. And the first thing I'd like to talk about, in your last newsletter, The Insight, you talked about, you asked this question, what is money? That, and a lot of people might say, well, we all know what money is, but actually over the last 20 years or so, it's kind of changed, hasn't it?
Well, it really has, because if you go back two or three decades, money basically was cash, currency in circulation, coins and bills, and checking accounts and savings accounts, and that was pretty much it.
A little couple of credit cards here and there.
Yeah, but they didn't amount to much.
No.
But now, then of course, you develop money market accounts, and of course, now credit cards are used for everything, including buying a bag of popcorn.
Right.
People use them like currency.
An automobile.
Yeah. And now, of course, you say, well, why does that make any difference? Well, it's obviously makes life a lot more convenient for everybody, but it made things a lot more difficult for the Federal Reserve, because the way the Federal Reserve controls the money supply is basically through the commercial banks. They basically control the reserves of those banks one way or the other, and that, in effect, controls the amount of money that banks have to lend, and that's how they used to control the economy.
Right.
And when you had only checking accounts and savings accounts and currency in circulation, that was very difficult. But then you got all this proliferation of near money, shall we call it. It made the Fed's job much more difficult.
Home equity loans is another example of that, too.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
That's big money.
And to the extent that these are made outside the banking system, they simply weren't under the control of the monetary authorities. It's one of these cases of where a regulatory structure is set up, and then technology and simply popular demand changes mm-hmm. the whole structure, and the regulators are really not in shape to control what is a very different kind of setup.
It's an interesting tension between regulators, I'm trying to say, and the marketplace, because, as you say, a lot of these things are simply products that some segment of the market developed.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Yeah. Let's go back to something you said. Why does the Fed need to control the money supply?
Well, that's the way the Fed tries to even out the business cycle and to dampen its magnitude. In other words, the whole idea is that if the economy looks like it is getting too strong, and that's what the Fed believes now, that the money supply is, that the labor demand is exuberant and that threatens higher wages and ultimately inflation. I think there are over overly concerned about this, as we'll talk later, mm-hmm. but that's their concern. And when they see those circumstances, they want to slow the economy a bit. And conversely, when things are in the dumps, when you're in a recession, they want to be able to stimulate things, to get things going. They want to prevent the extremes of the business cycle. And so the Fed is always aiming at that.
We're in a 17-year growth period. Many people call what's going on in the stock market a 17-year bull market. And a lot of people give the Fed credit for that success, haven't they?
Well, I think the Fed does deserve some credit. I mean, for example, they pulled off, I think, the one and only soft landing in the post-war period in 1994-95, in the sense that they tightened credit and didn't precipitate a recession, which is has otherwise been the norm.
Right.
But I also think that this 17-year bull market, which started in August of 1982, more than anything else, is really a celebration of the unwinding of inflation. And inflation is just a devastating force, not only in the economy, but even more so in the stock market.
Yep.
And that, of course, has really reintroduced the Fed's control of the economy, if you will, because now the Fed has a real stranglehold on what's going on, but it isn't through the banks, where they really had lost a lot of that control with the proliferation of what you can use in place of currency, credit cards, etc. But now the Fed has regained control because of the effects of interest rates on stocks. Stocks are always sensitive to interest rates, and now that over 50% of households own stocks or mutual funds, and that's about twice what it was a decade ago, and given the fact that people are using stock appreciation in lieu of saving, in other words, why save out of your current wages and salaries when the stock appreciation will put the kids through college, take care of early retirement, send you on a world cruise, etc. With that situation, you have tremendous sensitivity of consumer spending and hence the economy, since consumers account for about two-thirds of total economic activity. You have that sensitivity to stocks, and the stock market is always, always sensitive to interest rates, which the Federal Reserve controls.
The investor class has brought this control of the money supply for the Fed back around full circle, hasn't it?
It sure has.
Stand by, Gary. We're going to take a quick break. It's 20 after the hour, folks. We'll be right back with Gary Schilling, 888-822-8255. I'm Jim Blessingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for joining us. 888-822-8255 is our phone number. If you'd like to join me and my special guest, Gary Schilling, who's our good friend, the author of Deflation. Gary, your book is called Deflation. We've talked about it many times on the show before. We're going to talk about it and just refer to it in just a minute. But before we do, tell us where it's available.
Well, it's available through Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, Borders, you know, either bookstores or through the internet, and it's also available from the publisher directly if somebody is interested.
Okay.
And their toll-free number is 888-346-7444.
Okay. And now it's in its second edition, right?
Yeah, it is.
Put out a new edition this year, I think.
Right.
Okay. Let's get into the thing that I know that you like to talk about a lot, and that's the concepts of inflation and deflation. Here's the question. Gold is up significantly. Crude oil has almost doubled in 12 months. Payrolls are creeping up, and minimum wage increase is a virtual inevitability. Here's my hard question for you. Is the theme of your book, Deflation, still valid?
I think it is, because I list in the book 14 deflationary forces, none of which I think is any less significant now than it was, say, a year ago when many more people agreed with me on deflation. I mean, things like the end of the Cold War and move of government from deficits to surpluses, these mean that government is not spending more than its revenues, it's spending less. That's a deflationary force. It's taking more out of the economy in tax revenues than it's putting back in terms of spending. The internet itself, we all talk about it, tremendously deflationary force. You look at what that's done to brokerage commissions. Now, Merrill Lynch and now Morgan Stanley, Dean Witter, thrown in the towel. They've said that brokerage is a commodity. They're going to charge $29.95 for a trade. Hey, that tells you it's a commodity. It's not something with any restricted snob appeal. I mean, you go into a Ritz-Carlton hotel, they don't charge you $299.95. They charge you $300.
That's right.
Nothing with any exclusivity sells that way. And you look what it's doing to chop out middlemen and so on. The high technology, computers, biotech, the whole list, telecommunications, rates coming down, tremendously deflationary, not only in lower prices themselves, but helping people improve their productivity, cut their costs from a user standpoint. So you go through the whole list of this thing, new market economies, China becoming an increasingly big exporter, and now India looks like they're going to follow, that they're going to be more market-oriented. You go right down the list, I don't think there's any reason to believe that you don't still have inflation in the cards, although right now, obviously, a lot of people led by the Federal Reserve are more concerned about the opposite, a return of inflation.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing. I mean, there are lots of indicators out there. Gold went up over 300 for the first time in how long?
Yeah, but I would say this, that gold is very tough to figure, because inflation is one force, or deflation, that pushes prices, but also central banks buying and selling. And I think what happened here more than anything, it was the central banks basically saying they weren't going to sell even more gold than they already planned that caused the turn. And you also have to worry about, you know, Chinese peasants. They get a few yuan in their pants, and they want to buy gold jewelry to show they've made it.
Yeah.
And of course, political risk. People like gold. They can leave the country overnight with a lot of value.
So you think what's
very
happened,
complex to know what's really pushing it.
So you think the situation with gold may be more consumer or government related. Crude oil is a product of supply and demand the output of the OPEC nations and their ability to stay together.
Yeah, that's true, and they have successfully curtailed demand more so than they have in the past recently. Now, how long that lasts is hard to say, because their history, like the history of any cartels, is cheaters, because it's to cheat, because a cartel keeps prices above equilibrium, and that means that people are curtailing supply more than they want to, so it encourages cheating.
Right. What do you think about wages creeping up? I mean, I'm hearing more and more Republicans say that minimum wage increase is basically a sure thing. Hang on to that thought, Gary. We're going to take a quick break. Folks, it's 29 after the hour. We're going to be right back and let Gary answer my question when we come back after these messages. 888-822-8255. If you'd like to join us, ask a question, make a comment. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back. It's 33 after. Thank you for joining us. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. 888-822-8255 is our phone number. And Gary Schilling is our guest. He's the author of Deflation. He's a contributor to Forbes magazine. Gary, how long have you been writing for Forbes?
I started in 1983, actually.
Yeah, that's a long
time. A long time ago.
Yeah, congratulations. That's a long run.
Well, thanks. It's a lot of columns. I do one every other issue once a month, and a lot of columns later.
I really enjoy your columns, though. And I tell you, whenever people that I know that you're on my show, I mean, that's almost the first thing they say. Hey, he's that great columnist with Forbes. So you've got a great readership out there.
Thanks.
Gary, I was asking you the question about payrolls and some of the things the Fed is looking at. What does the Fed think it's seeing with regard to inflation?
Well, the Fed, and by the way, one of the 14 deflationary forces I list in discussion in this new book, Deflation, is that the Fed and other central banks is fighting the last war, inflation, and not the next one, deflation.
Mm-hmm.
And they have central bankers have a congenital fear of inflation. They're always worried about it. But what they see is very tight labor markets, and they also see unionized labor being more aggressive. You're seeing some pretty fast settlements in the auto industry, for example. But what they are not seeing in effect and are not willing to really accept is a rapid growth in productivity, which is offsetting these wage increases. Mm-hmm. In other words, if somebody is producing 3% more per hour this year than last year in physical units, that many more cars, widgets, whatever, then you can pay them 3% more without in effect causing price pressures. And that's what's been going on, and that is really at heart what I think this deflation that we forecast is all about. It's the fact that you have so many of these high-tech industries, biotech, computers, semiconductors, the internet, telecommunications. These industries are now getting big enough that they are beginning to dominate the economy, and that's where the big productivity is. And just in previous periods, like the late 1800s when it was the Industrial Revolution and the railroad, the 1920s when it was electrification of homes and factories and the automobile, those are periods of tremendous productivity growth and what we call the good deflation.
Right.
When it's really excess supply driven by productivity, new technology, and I think that's what's coming in, but the Fed is slow to accept that.
Let me ask you a question. Explain to me why, obviously, politicians claim you got to believe that they want the economy to continue to grow, and they know that one of the things that the politicians get irritated at sometimes is the timing of the decisions and the things, the steps that the Fed makes. You know, George Bush basically blamed the Fed for part of his loss when he lost the presidential race. When we know that. And we also know that one of the main inflationary indicators that the Fed is looking at right now to identify inflation in the marketplace are payrolls, increasing payrolls, the concern for that. How do they make some sense of increasing minimum wage?
Well, the minimum wage is in some sense becoming more less and less relevant. Very few people are covered by it anymore.
Exactly.
But at the same time, there has traditionally been the feeling that if you increase the minimum wage, then you push wages up the spectrum all the way to the top. And that's why organized labor is always in favor of higher minimum wages, because they figure it's going to spill over and they're going to get theirs.
Many contracts are tied to minimum wage.
Well, that's right. And my feeling right now is that this is really a product of this tremendous prosperity and spending, which is, I think, almost 100% of spillover from stock appreciation. And I think it's a lousy time to increase minimum wages. I'd rather rely on free market forces and let people get paid what they're worth. And my concern is that you get the minimum wage up now, and that may not make much difference right now, but then we get into the next recession, and a lot of people are no longer worth that minimum wage. And so what do you get? Not people working, but at lower rates, but because the minimum wage is a floor, you get more unemployment.
That's exactly right.
More government benefits, et cetera, which really doesn't help anybody.
It's totally counterintuitive right now, isn't it?
It really is. Yeah, I think it's a lousy time, but it's probably a reflection of this Wall Street-generated prosperity, and probably more a sign of a top in the stock market than anything else.
Speaking of labor, you brought that up in your newsletter Insight. You had a section in there called Scared Labor. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think that up until very recently, labor has been more concerned with job security than anything else, because American business and restructuring are basically saying, hey, if you want more money, fine, we'll just move more operations to Mexico, and that just isn't manufacturing, that's services, telecommunication, or telemarketing, for example. A lot of that's done in Mexico or Ireland. Computer code writing is done in India, and they communicate back and forth by satellite. So American business, with globalization and outsourcing, has the ability to move not only to cheaper areas of the country, but offshore. And that is one of the things that has kept labor on the run. Now you have such tight labor markets, that's changed a bit, and that's one of the things, of course, the Federal Reserve worries about.
Gary, recently I went on the Internet and compared two automobiles at one of the sites, one of the car-buying sites, and compared two automobiles to all the different features and prices and everything. Both of them, two different manufacturers, point of delivery, where the assembly was being made, both of them were in Canada.
Yeah.
Stand by. We've got to take a quick break. It's 39 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Ladies and gentlemen, don't go away. We'll be right back with Gary Schilling. Welcome back, heroes. It's 44 after. I'm glad you're here. And good day. I also want to say good day to our friends listening around the world. I think I forgot to do that at the top of the hour. We're glad you're with us as well. Those of you listening who are listening over the Internet around the world, thank you for joining in. Thank you for tuning in. I appreciate it very much. Don't forget to check out my website, smallbusinessadvocate.com. Gary, tell us again where we can get your book, Deflation.
Yeah, you can get it through Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, Border, either the Internet or the bookstores, or you can get it directly from the publisher.
Here's that number.
There's a toll-free number, 888-346-7444.
Gary, do you guys have a website?
Yeah, we do.
Give it to us.
It's www.agaryshilling, one word, agaryshilling.com.
Now, can they get your newsletter? Can they subscribe to your newsletter there?
Sure.
Okay.
They get information there, or they can call that same toll-free number. We can hook you up in terms of the newsletter, 888-346-7444.
What are some of the services that you offer through your company?
Well, we do consulting. That's largely with larger corporations and financial institutions like pension funds, mutual funds, and so on. We also manage money. We take our own medicine and manage money largely for high net worth individuals. And that's done fairly aggressively. And if we're right that we're now entering a bear market in U.S. stocks, I hope we do well in that environment. But
yeah.
As you always have to say, past history is no guide to future success.
Absolutely. Speaking of the stock market, we've been on a roller coaster for the last few weeks. And, of course, that's not the first time we've seen that. But recently, in a week's time, the stock market swung about 600 points, didn't it?
Yeah, it has, and I think there's a great deal of nervousness out there because stocks are, as they say, priced for perfection. They're very, very high levels. I mean, it just record levels in relation to earnings, dividends, the size of the market in relation to the economy, you name it, and it doesn't leave any room for error. As they say, when companies stumble like IBM did last week, they don't take them to the woodshed. They shoot them on the spot. I mean, that was a quick 20% off that stock, and
well,
that's a huge, huge stock.
Well, Xerox too. Xerox lost 25%.
Oh, sure. And you've got the earnings risk, and at the same time, of course, you have the Federal Reserve raising interest rates, and that's usually lethal for stocks. So,
yeah.
What I find amazing is how well stocks have held up. But I think that's a product of a 17-year bull market because everybody believes that. Even the 87 crash was a great buying opportunity. They've been trained, and I use the word trained deliberately, by the 17-year bull market to buy dips. So there's a tremendous desire. But if you look at the market's performance, particularly the S&P since July, middle of July, it's been a case of lower highs, lower lows. It's a sawtooth pattern along a declining trend, and that's what I think we'll probably see in a bear market that could ultimately take 40-50% off of stocks from their highs.
What's disconcerting is when the Dow is up 100 in the morning and down 200 by the end of the day.
Well, yeah, and that's
down to 200.
Usually a very bad kind of sign.
What causes something?
Well, I think it's general nervousness. It's people who are worried about higher interest rates. They're worried about weak earnings. And, some people are saying, look, I've done very well over a long period of time, and it's time to take some money off the table here.
Yeah.
Trees don't grow to the sky, as they say in Wall Street.
Did I hear you say that you're predicting a bear market?
Oh, yeah, I think we've entered one already.
You think we are there?
Yeah, I think we are. And as I say, the pattern looks pretty well established.
What's
and another thing, too, that's very, very disconcerting is the narrowness of the focus. I mean, now you're down to literally a dozen stocks, which are the only ones people want to buy, Microsoft, GE, Cisco,
mm-hmm.
Intel, a few others. And when you get that narrowness of focus, it tells you that people really are concerned that they don't want to invest in the whole of the economy, and they're in effect telling you there's something wrong with the economy. And I think that something wrong is the overdependence of consumer spending, which again is two-thirds of total economic activity. that dependence on stock prices themselves. So you have a vicious circle here, because your stocks go down, consumers lose confidence, they stop spending, that stuff on profits, that stuff on stocks, that makes them even less willing to spend, etc. And the whole thing could feed on itself on the downside, just as it has on the upside.
Do you consider yourself a bull or a bear?
I'm probably more a skeptic. I wouldn't say I'm a rampant bear. Some people would say I am, but I'm a skeptic, and I would say I'm not alone, because when stocks get out of hand, even though the technology-driven nature of the stock market is exactly what I think we see ahead, and I talk about that in great detail in this book, Deflation. Despite that, I think that things have really gotten way ahead of themselves, and have been that way for the last couple of years. So, excuse me, I've been very skeptical.
What do you think the stock market's going to look like next year?
I think it'll probably be a lot lower. It may have reached its bottom by then. Usually markets don't decline for much over a year, oftentimes less.
Yeah.
But I think we'll see a lot of people extremely disillusioned, and a lot of individual stockholders who've never owned stocks before will reach what I call a puke point, where they want to sell their last stock and never own another share, and that's when a good bottom is made.
Stand by, Gary. We've got to take a quick break. Folks, it's 50 after. We'll be right back with Gary Schilling. Thanks for joining us. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're having a great visit with our very good friend, Gary Schilling, the author of Deflation, the president of A. Gary Schilling and Associates. They're investment consultants and work with a lot of different folks. Gary is a contributing columnist to Forbes magazine, has been now for 16 or 17 years, and he's a member of our Brain Trust, and we really enjoy having him on the show. And I want to let you know that he's agreed to join us on the 16th, the 16th of November, when the Federal Open Market Committee meets again. He and Eleanor Solomon will be our guests. Gary, that's going to be a very momentous meeting, isn't it?
Well, it may or may not be, because with Y2K then looking us right in the teeth, the Federal Reserve, regardless of their intents, may simply do nothing. And more importantly, if they don't raise rates, a lot of people will say, well, they really want to. They're holding off because of Y2K. They'll do it at their next meeting after the first of the year. So I rather suspect that there's going to be a lot of nervousness whether they raise rates or whether they don't. And that's one of the reasons that I think we basically are in a bear market in stocks now, because the one thing that brings down stock markets inevitably is rising interest rates.
But the next 3 weeks, the events are there. I don't know if there's ever been a time when some of the different indicators that the Fed watches will be more on our minds than they will over the next 3 weeks. It's going to be a lot of fun. In the almost 2 years that I've been watching the Fed on this show, I'd have to put this next meeting up right up there on top, because everybody agrees, I think, basically, that the Fed won't take any action in December, because that's hard by to the change in the century.
Right, and as we talked earlier, now the Fed has tremendous control over stocks. They always did through rising interest rates, but with consumers dependent on stock appreciation in lieu of saving it out of current income, it makes the whole thing a lot more sensitive than in the past. So
right,
the sensitivity, both in terms of people listening to shows like this and to the reality what the Fed does, is probably at an all-time high.
We got about a minute and a half, Gary, and you didn't know I was going to ask you this question, but I got to ask you, what are your thoughts on Robert Mundell winning the Nobel Prize for Economics?
He obviously was a big contributor to not only the theoretical foundation of the euro, the new currency in Europe with 11 countries involved, but also had a lot to do with the intellectual underpinnings of the so-called supply-side economics, mm-hmm. The idea of cut taxes and let people spend the money as they see fit, let entrepreneurs, small businesses have more of an opportunity. So I think it's probably very fitting, because they had really run through with the Nobel Prize, and that has to be awarded to living people.
Yep.
So they run through all the Keynesians, the guys who were the heroes back in the late 30s and early after the war. They wanted to get it out to them before they died, and now they're moving on to kind of the next generation, if you will. And it probably made a lot of sense to, and symbolically, I think all the supply-siders, including the Wall Street Journal editorial page, were just jumping for joy.
Oh, yeah, because, of course, one of their main guys on their editorial
Bob Bartley, who's the editor of the editorial page, he was very early and very strongly committed. He's a good friend of mine. As a matter of fact, I'm going to be with him to watch the new millennium come in. We go up with some friends to a ski house in southern Vermont every year, and the Schillings and the Bartleys and a couple other couples. So we'll be able to discuss the whole issue in more detail.
Yeah, I'm be interested in hearing your conversation, hearing about that conversation when you get back from that next year. Gary, we got to wrap it up for this hour. As always, you did a great job. We're looking forward to seeing you in 3 weeks.
Okay, thanks,
Gary. See you later.
Bye.
Gary Schilling, ladies and gentlemen, the author of Deflation. I recommend you check this book out. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest country in the world. And remember today, be guilty of committing a random act of kindness. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. I'll be back in a few minutes with Steve Martin.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.